As New York continues to battle the opioid epidemic, which has been exacerbated by the arrival of COVID-19, the state should have more resources at its disposal for this fight, as a result of more than $1 billion in funding obtained through legal settlements with opioid manufacturers and distributors. Helping to direct those resources in the future will be the recently created State Opioid Settlement Board, which was born out of legislation signed into law this June as part of a campaign to ensure that any settlement money was invested into prevention, treatment, and recovery. To discuss the work of the Opioid Settlement Board, as well as the opioid epidemic more broadly, we're checking in with Avi Israel, who was tapped by the State Attorney General to serve on the newly created board in light of his advocacy, along with his wife Julie, following the suicide of their son Michael, who struggled with opioid addiction. Welcome to the show, Avi.
Thank you for having me.
So I mentioned at the top that there's going to be more than $1 billion of resources. Can you put into context what that means in terms of the investments that we've seen in past years by the state and local governments to combat the opioid epidemic and help people find treatment and potentially recovery?
So I'm going to put it very simple. There's going to be a lot more lives saved. Mm-hmm. What I envision seeing for the future, actually a lot more resources for people. So let me start with the way treatment is right now in New York State, which is, in my opinion, is very stale. It's not imaginative at all. Okay, you go in, if you can find a bed right now, you're lucky. And once you get in, and you have to put up through this insurance, whether you have insurance and don't have insurance and so forth, you know, you get to stay in for 28 days and then you're out and basically you're given a piece of paper and say, you know, by the way, reach out to this outpatient agency and make an appointment, right, which it may take sometimes 2-3 weeks or whatever. You go through another evaluation, which may take another couple of weeks or so, and then you get to meet with a person once a week. The way the system is set up right now, you're only allowed 8 units per week. Each unit consists of 15 minutes. So that's 2 hours per week that you allow to meet with somebody.
That's
it.
Not a lot of time.
Not a lot of time. What I would like to see for the future, first of all, I want to change the access to treatment. Okay, I want to make it more easier, more accessible, mm-hmm, more friendly. That's number one. Number two, how do you navigate a very complicated system that we have in place right now? Whether you have insurance, you don't have insurance, what kind of insurance do you have? What does it cover? What it doesn't cover? That has to be eliminated. We have to start looking at a person as who's suffering from SUD as an individual. So if you have cancer, if you have heart problems, if you have diabetes, the treatment is fitted to you rather than trying to fit into a box or whatever it is. If one medication doesn't work for you, if you have diabetes, I'm diabetic. I went through 3 different medications until I found the one that works for me.
Right.
It doesn't work for somebody with SUD or mental health. Basically, you are shoved into a box and said, this is the treatment that you're getting. Work with it. If you don't work with it, then you start displaying behavior that is part of your addiction. You get kicked out.
Well, so do you think the shortcomings of the current treatments that are available in New York are a product of a lack of resources invested in the space currently?
That's one of them. Okay,
so
there's regulations that put into place that does not allow flexibility for a treatment facility to stretch or imagine or do things. Mm-hmm. And the rate of reimbursement is pathetic.
So then how does an influx of money, potentially more than $1 billion, what sort of opportunities does that present?
So we have people that, I call it this merry-go-round, that they get on this merry-go-round, which they go in and out of treatment, in and out of treatment, in and out of treatment, okay? That needs to stop. We need to start looking at people as individual. We need to start looking at patients as individuals, okay, and start tailoring treatment to them. Okay, so we need to put a pot of money into that and say, okay, how do we treat a person that's been in and out 4 or 5 times out of treatment? There's obviously there's something that needs to be done a lot more than just SUD treatment. Mm-hmm. So mental health has to get in there, okay? Support after treatment is non-existent in this country or in this state, mm-hmm. okay? We need to start using programs that we already have. For instance, we have a program 820 reintegration, which allows you to stay for 6 months in a facility, which allows you to get whatever, if you need your GED or if you need a trade or whatever it is, you have an opportunity to learn. You have an opportunity to learn how, you know, your coping skills, you know, get your coping skills back again. Learn how to manage a checkbook.
Right.
You know, we want people to come back into society as functioning human beings.
In case you're just joining us, you're listening to the Capitol Press Room, and we're talking with Avi Israel, president and founder of Save the Michaels of the World, who was recently appointed by State Attorney General Letitia James to serve on the state's Opioid Settlement Board, which will help direct more than $1 billion in funding secured from legal settlements with opioid manufacturers and distributors. What is going to be your part in figuring out how this money is distributed? Are you and the board simply going to get to say, here are the XYZ priorities that we think should be funded and the state has to follow those? Or are you more about making recommendations? What is your job moving forward?
So I really don't have a clear picture of that yet because I think I'm the only one that's been announced.
Yes,
right?
That I'm aware of.
that's what I'm aware of. I'd like to see actually for the board more family or more people with lived experience mm-hmm. appointed to the board. That's number one. My role, as I understand it so far, is to make recommendation to the legislators, and they get to vote on it, and then obviously it gets down to OASIS and so forth, then it's the community. Okay, I'm going to look at, for my part, I'm going to look at new innovative programs that I think needs to be tried. I'm going to look at a robust prevention program that I'd like to see. I'd like to see more outreach into the community to talk about addiction in general and not the drug. You know, addiction is a disease. We're not talking about that. We're always talking about fentanyl or meth or whatever it is. Let's start talking about addiction as a disease. And let's let people know what happens when you get that disease. You're hooked for life. Okay? I want to see support after treatment. I'd like to see some kind of programmings for to have transportation for people. So you get out of treatment and you basically left on your own. You did 28 days where you were told, you know, you get up at this time, you go to breakfast at that time, you go to this program, that program, you know, you get a rest or whatever it is. You were told what to do. It's like boot camp when you're in the service, except you're in the service, you know, you're not suffering from a disease. Then you do 28 days and you're basically put out on the street and says, okay, go ahead, do what you need to do.
Yeah.
All right. There's no coping skills. You know, people don't have that coping skills. They don't know what to do. So what happens is there's no support. There's no housing. There's no transportation. They tell you, well, you got to go to the social services and apply for food stamps and stuff like that. Who's going to take you down there? Who's going to help you fill up the papers? Those are the kind of things that we need to do after treatment. And who says that 28 days is right for you or I? You know, I may need 90 days. You know, mm-hmm. I think it should be left to the treatment facility to decide, you know, to the professionals. How long does that person need to stay? I'd like to see a lot of services after treatment. You know, housing, education, access to whatever it is. You got to go to a doctor. You know, who's going to take you down there? Right now in Buffalo, we have, we have our organization, Save the Michaels of the World. Okay, we provide transportation. So, for instance, I give you for example, we have a mom that's in treatment, and we provide transportation for her twice a week to go see her kids, you know, from 4 to 6 p.m. Mm-hmm. If she didn't have that kind of support, she probably would not stay in treatment. We have twice or three times a week, we take a young lady who is pregnant right now and has one another kid, okay? We take her to methadone three days a week. Those are the kind of things that needs to be provided for people to stay sober.
Well, so the easy part then here with this money is funding initiatives that are already widely accepted, but you're also talking about transforming the way we think about prevention and recovery. Is that going to be a heavy lift? I mean, do you think there's going to be opposition either on this board internally, depending on who it is made up of, or from lawmakers or potentially Governor Kathy Hochul?
I don't know. Right now, I don't have the answer. We have not had a meeting. I don't even know.
But you spend a lot of time in this space. Do you think that this is something that's widely accepted, your vision, or are you an outlier in terms of the recovery community?
I think there's a lot of what I just said is accepted, mm-hmm. and as a lot of people agree with me. What I think we need to change is the way society thinks of addiction.
That's a big lift.
That is a heavy lift. So, you know, there's people who will tell you, well, you know what, I'm not giving my money to those junkies. My tax dollars should not go over there. Mm-hmm. Okay? But yet, they'll approve paving the same road five times in 1 year. So we need to let people understand. You know, I'll give you an example, right? There's a person who smokes for 40 years and gets lung cancer, right? That person knows that smoking can cause lung cancer and can kill you, right? Nobody punishes that person. Nobody tells them, well, you know, you did that to yourself, so you got to take care of your own self. No, we provide all the support and the treatment that they need. But if you take a kid like my son, who was prescribed into addiction because of Crohn's disease, he was called all kind of names and was denied treatment by my insurance company and yet could not find a bed, so he took his life. Why? What's the difference? What's the difference between somebody that's suffering from diabetes than somebody that's suffering from addiction?
Just the stigma of the disease.
There you go. So we need to change that, the way people think of addiction.
And after a quick break, we'll continue our conversation with Avi Israel, who was appointed to the state's Opioid Settlement Board, which is going to be tasked with helping distribute more than $1 billion in funding secured by the state from legal settlements with opioid distributors and manufacturers.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by the New York State AFL-CIO, a federation of 3,000 unions fighting for working people by keeping New York State union strong. UnionStrongNY.com for more information.
In case you're just joining us, we're continuing our conversation with Avi Israel, the president and founder of Save the Michaels of the World, who was recently appointed by State Attorney General Letitia James to serve on the state's Opioid Settlement Board, which will help distribute more than $1 billion in legal settlement funds secured through agreements with opioid manufacturers and distributors. And before the break, you were talking about shaking up the status quo as it pertains to treatment and prevention in New York. And one idea that meets that description is the utilization of so-called safe injection sites, where New Yorkers could utilize drugs, but they would be supervised by medical professionals, so they could make sure their drugs are safe, comparatively, that their drug paraphernalia doesn't pose a danger, like transmitting a hepatitis C with a dirty or infected needle, and that they could get linked to medical care through these contacts. Do you think these types of sites should play a role in New York's future?
Yes.
And how come?
Because it's harm reduction. It's keeping a person alive. So I'll give you an example. I had a mom who called me a couple of years ago and said, Avi, what do you think? I got my son who is in severe withdrawal and sitting in my driveway, and he wants to use. What should I do? And my answer was, go get him the drugs. The point is, you keep the person alive. As long as the person is alive, there's a chance of recovery. There's no chance of recovery for my son. But if the person is alive, there's a chance of recovery. And that's my attitude. Keep people alive, because we can work out the differences. We can find a way for them to get healthy. We can't do that when we lose them.
As we mentioned earlier, New York is poised to receive more than $1 billion in opioid settlement funding that can be invested into prevention and treatment. How should we think of this number in the grand scheme of things? Is it a significant amount of money, or do we still need additional dollars on top of this?
It is a significant amount of money. That's $1.5 billion that we didn't have. And there's probably going to be more coming in, which is going to be spread out over, I don't know, 10, 15 years or whatever it is. I really think that more need to be invested by the federal government, by state government, because we're talking about a disease that affects probably 1 out of 4 homes in this country, whether it's alcohol, whether it's substance, whatever it is. You know, it's just something that people suffer from. You know, addiction has been around since man started walking upright. We always linked addiction to the person of low morality or weak or whatever it is. It's not. It really is not. You know, nobody wants to be addicted to anything. It just happened. Who cares how the hell it happens? What we need to care about is, how do we get you off of that, you know, out of that rabbit hole, and how do we put you back into society? And that's what I care about.
So when we do spend more than $1.5 billion, how do we ensure that we're getting bang for our buck? What sort of accountability measures or studies should be incorporated into this to ensure that we're investing into programs and initiatives that actually work?
I, for one, would like to see more new programs.
Mm-hmm. But do we need to make sure we study those to ensure that they're working?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You want to see the rate of success. You know, we know what the rate of failure is in this country. I think a few years ago, the National Institute of Health came out with the numbers that 92% of people that come out of treatment don't make it into 6 months. So we know what the rate of failure is. How about if we start lowering that number and make sure, you know, and this is not going to be happen overnight. This is, you know, this is a marathon. This is not a sprint. So this is going to take a while to make sure that people get better. The one thing that I want to make sure is that we don't give up and don't say, okay, that this is not working. So if there's a new program that we start, let's give it 5 years and let's see what the numbers are.
When figuring out how to distribute all of this money, do you think we should take a grassroots approach, handing out money to groups like yourselves on the front lines that might know how to best direct it? Or do you think it needs to trickle down from the top?
There are programs right now in New York State that work. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to give you an example, and I'm not putting a plug in for them or anything. I just know of the program. My daughter used to work over there, and I know her. So Dynamite Youth Council in Brooklyn mm-hmm. has, I think it's like a 3 or 5 year program and a great rate of success. Something like that need to be duplicated. I would like to see different type of pilots around the state. And let's measure how that works. And let's see what the rate of success is. Like I said, this is not going to happen overnight. This is going to take a while. So you give a program 5 years and you see, let's see what, you know, show me what you can do. and let's start measuring the rate of success. You know, don't forget also that you're talking about a disease, a chronic disease that people have to battle every single day. It's like I suffer from diabetes, okay? I think about going and having a piece of chocolate every day. You know, I just know that I can't do that because then my blood sugar will spike. It's the same thing that somebody suffer from addiction. You know, it's that the devil and the angel on your shoulders that go every day. You know, you can do this or no, you can't do that. What works is what kind of support they have around them.
In the decades since your son died, do you feel like the conversation about the stigma and the way we perceive substance use disorder has advanced in a meaningful way? Or do you still find that the conversations, like you're saying, treat diabetes differently than substance use disorder?
I think it advanced in a way where people can hear it more. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it's at the point yet where people compare it to diabetes or any other disease. I think there's still that misconception out there that, you know, you did it to yourself and you're responsible to get yourself out of there.
So in the press release from the Attorney General's office in which she names you to the Opioid Settlement Board, there is a laundry list of quotes from elected officials and advocates in this space where they laud your work in the advocacy space. And I'm curious, I guess, on two fronts. One, what does it feel like to get that type of recognition? And two, are you uncomfortable with that kind of recognition? Is it something that you don't really want to get the spotlight for?
First, I should have said that in the beginning. I really want to thank Attorney General Letitia James for having the confidence in me and doing that. You know, I've been doing this for 10 years. Mm-hmm. I'm close to 70 years old. That's not where I envision my life to be, you know. But I got into it because I lost my son. And it was important to me to let the world know that there is a problem out there that people are not paying attention to. And we were very successful along the way. Now, as far as am I worthy or not worthy, you know, I have that struggle every day. I have that struggle every day. And I think, do I want my son back? Absolutely. But can I be that selfish and forget about all the work that we've done over the years that, you know, thousands of people got their life back because Michael lost his? That's a struggle that I have, you know. I don't know if I'm worthy of that or not. I just know this, that I'm in a place where you know, all the money in the world is not going to bring Michael back. But my way of communicating with Michael is helping somebody. And as long as I'm alive, I'm going to keep on doing it.
And finally, by all accounts, the arrival of the novel coronavirus has exacerbated the opioid epidemic. When you think of where we are right now, do you feel like we are dramatically further back in this fight than we were in February 2019? Are we at the same place? And what's it going to take to get things heading in the right direction?
Well, the rate of overdose has been going up before COVID. Mm-hmm. It spiked way up during COVID. Right. You have people being isolated at home. They were getting money, whether it were unemployment or whatever it is, not going anywhere, and calling their drug dealers. So we're not in a good place right now. We're actually in the worst place that we were before. Mm-hmm. The other thing that because of COVID is obviously the availability of treatment facilities and beds. That has slowed right down. We're in like most places operate at 50% capacity. And if there's a positive COVID, you know, the whole facility gets closed down.
Right.
So, you know, we need to start dealing with COVID and get a plan in place to where COVID is going to be here forever. It's not going away. So we need to be able to deal with it and at the same time provide the services that we did before COVID. Okay. One of the things that a lot of people may not agree with me or may not want to talk about is at one time we had the options to where people who committed a crime or whatever for the use of drugs, they were given the option to go to treatment or go to jail. Okay, bail reform took that away. Okay, we took the power away from judges. Okay, we had a tool at one time where people who suffered from addiction had a way to go into treatment, and they were being monitored on daily basis or weekly basis and so forth. And then you know that, you know, there was a carrot and a stick. If you didn't do what you're supposed to do, you were going to get smacked. We don't have that tool anymore. You know, people can go in and rob a store five times in one day and just get an appearance ticket. That's one thing. Because of COVID, there is no drug testing anymore. Courts have shut down. So it was a free-for-all. We're starting to get back into some sort of normalcy right now. We're not there yet. Okay. I think, unfortunately, we are going to lose a lot more people until we get back to the point where we start setting plans in place and allow treatment facilities to open up and provide the services that we did before.
Well, we've been speaking with Avi Israel. He is a recent appointee to the state's Opioid Settlement Board, and he is the president and founder of the Save the Michaels of the World Incorporated. Avi, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.
Join us again for Capitol Press Room, a production of WCNY Connected, Syracuse.